So tonight, we're working again in Sri Aurobindo's book, The Mother. And we'll get to the third chapter, but let's just touch upon where we've been so far. The first chapter constitutes a message that Sri Aurobindo released on the birthday of the mother, 21st of February in 1927. By then, everyone in the ashram was addressing her as the mother. Those who had previously known her as Mira, and those who had quietly been calling her the mother, were all addressing her in this fashion from there. So when Sri Aurobindo, in this message, declares that she is the supreme, it has quite an impact. It is not simply that she is an executive force of Sri Aurobindo, not someone who bends her will to his, but rather she is the extension of his will. The Divine Mother is not different from the divine. It isn't that this is the only element of that first chapter. There's so much that is rich there. But he says, the Supreme demands your surrender to her. The Supreme is identified as this great goddess, the She. It's a clarion call, of course, to everyone involved in the ashram to rise to a level where they will be practicing a new kind of yoga. It isn't the sadhana of the past. It demands a full-bodied, full-hearted, open-minded adhesion to the truth that is descending from above and opening from below. There are concordances in this teaching with insights from the past, but nothing directly comparable has ever occurred in the history of Indian yogic practice to what was being attempted here. The second chapter was actually a letter written in 1927 on the 30th of May to Motilal Mehta, who was living in Gujarat. So again, not everyone who was practicing the yoga of Sri Aurobindo was stationed in the ashram. There were sincere sadhaks across India. And in this, Sri Aurobindo says, that whatever is accomplished in the scale of the universe, from top to bottom, is done by the divine through his Shakti, who is behind all action, but veiled by his yoga maya. Now, we spoke last time about the term Shakti, that it means power, comes from the root shak, energy, power. Yoga maya, yoga, what is in union with, what is constrained, what is controlled, maya, that which measures, that which meets out, in other words, takes the infinite, compresses it, and presents that which represents the infinite in a beautiful, finite form through the power of its yoga. Well, this was written in 1927. You'll remember that the synthesis of yoga, which had been serialized in the Arya as a chapter in the Yoga of Divine Works, called The Master of the Work. When Sri Aurobindo revises it to some extent, this chapter, in 1932, roughly, he inserts a passage which was absent then, and it echoes what's in this second chapter. He writes, "For though the transcendental divine is already here as the Purushottama in the secret heart of our mystery, he is veiled by many coats and disguises of his magic worldwide yoga maya. It is only by the ascent and victory of the soul here in the body that the disguises can fall away and the dynamis of the supreme truth replace this tangled weft of half-truth that becomes creative error, this emergent knowledge that is converted by its plunge into the inconscience of matter and its slow partial return towards itself into an effect of ignorance." So here, in the span of a sentence, Sri Aurobindo has described the nature of the involution and how, through the power of this yoga maya, there is this concentration of all aware light in an apparent darkness, and then a growth out of it in a process through which the soul attains a supreme victory, not simply for itself in casting off fetters of ignorance and former darkness, but for the world as well, because that transcendence is here. That sentence in Sri Aurobindo's second chapter is simple. In all that is done in the universe, the divine through his Shakti is behind all action, but he is veiled by his yoga maya and works through the ego of the jiva in the lower nature. So you can see how he has expanded it and contextualized it into this revised essay, which later would find publication in the book form of The Synthesis of Yoga. The idea of the Shakti is something ancient in India, and we'll come back and touch upon the goddess traditions in North and South India at a later point as we go through the book. But it's useful to remember that there are two great marking points where the goddess begins to get her full deserved attention. Yes, she appears as Vak or Vach in the Veda. She appeared, as I mentioned last time, in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. And from time to time, she makes appearances in the Puranas, in the Gita. The Divine Mother is Paraprakriti, the Supreme Nature. Although it is not directly said to be that in the Gita, that is what it is. But it's when we get to what we call the Common Era, about 300 to 600 CE, that the Devi Mahatmya comes forward, is codified in mellifluous Sanskrit, and extols the nature of the Supreme as the Divine Mother. And there you have that famous litany, Ya Devi Sarvabhuteshu Shakti Rupena Samstita Namastasye, 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 Namo Namaha. to that goddess stationed in the heart of all beings as power. I salute you. I salute you. I salute you. Three times. The mind's recognition, the heart's submission, the body's adoration, all are folded into the completeness of the giving to the goddess. And then later, after the Devi Mahatmya, several hundred years, somewhere between 1000 and 1200 CE, we have the Devi Bhagavata Purana, in which we see the goddess emerge here as utterly independent, no more subservient either to Vishnu or Shiva, not appearing as an executive power folded into him, obedient to the god, but rather, in the first place, identified with the Supreme Absolute, transcendent, as Sri Aurobindo writes here. And the second, creative, a power that releases consciousness, energy, form into manifestation in the universe. And then third, that she identifies herself, stations herself in the universe, in all of its planes, just as we found in that litany from the Devi Mahatmya, a universal reality, a creative personality and person, and then identified with the transcendent above, not subservient to a god. All the avatars are issued forth from her being. She is their mother, the great mother power. So we have some context here that we share as we go along. The third chapter is brief. It's a letter written to a disciple, Poonam Chand Shah, who is at this time in Gujarat. The letter was written on the 1st of August, 1927, so just a couple of weeks in front of Sri Aurobindo's birthday that year. Remember, the message for the mother on her birthday was Chapter 1. Now, Sri Aurobindo is writing to Poonam Chand. If you know something about him, he first came to the ashram around 1919, so he was there as one of the contingent before Mother returned from Japan. He was stationed there practicing yoga. In 1923, Poonam Chand had a conversation with Sri Aurobindo and proposed that he would go to Gujarat, to his native place, and bring his wife back, Champa Ben, because she could help with the kitchen work, she could help with the work, because until then Purani was doing it, perhaps. Perhaps Purani's culinary expertise did not extend so far as to satisfy all palates. Sri Aurobindo said, essentially, it's a good idea. By the way, what is Champaklal doing there? So, Poonam Chand gave a brief description of what Champaklal was doing. He said, bring him too. And that is how Champaklal wound up in the Sri Aurobindo Ashram, coming there in 1923. Chapter 3. To walk through life armored against all fear, peril, and disaster. Only two things are needed, two that go always together. The grace of the Divine Mother, and on your side, an inner state made up of faith, sincerity, and surrender. Let your faith be pure, candid, and perfect. An egoistic faith in the mental and vital being tainted by ambition, pride, vanity, mental arrogance, vital self-will, personal demand, desire for the petty satisfactions of the lower nature, is a low and smoke-obscured flame that cannot burn upwards to heaven. Regard your life as given you only for the divine work and to help in the divine manifestation. Desire nothing but the purity, force, light, whiteness, calm, ananda of the divine consciousness and its insistence to transform and perfect your mind, life, and body. Ask for nothing but the divine, spiritual, and supramental truth, its realization on earth and in you, and in all who are called and chosen, and the conditions needed for its creation, and its victory over all opposing forces. Let your sincerity and surrender be genuine and entire. When you give yourself, give completely, without demand, without condition, without reservation, so that all in you shall belong to the Divine Mother, and nothing be left to the ego or given to any other power. The more complete your faith, sincerity, and surrender, the more will grace and protection be with you. And when the grace and protection of the Divine Mother are with you, what is there that can touch you, or whom need you fear? A little of it even will carry you through all difficulties, obstacles, and dangers. Surrounded by its full presence, you can go securely on your way because it is hers, careless of all menace, unaffected by any hostility, however powerful, whether from this world or from worlds invisible. Its touch can turn difficulties into opportunities, failure into success, and weakness into unfaltering strength. For the grace of the Divine Mother is the sanction of the Supreme, and now or tomorrow, its effect is sure, a thing decreed, inevitable, and irresistible. When the first fascicles of Savitri were released to the public, Kapali Shastriya took up the first canto and began to translate it into Sanskrit poetry. And he sent it to Sri Aurobindo, who could then make clarifications about what he really meant to say in using one word rather than another. We look at these words, and often we have a conventional sense that comes to our mind. So sometimes it's helpful to actually take the English and translate it into Sanskrit, and then it gives us a profounder sense of what it is that we're reading. Faith, sincerity, surrender. faith, all would agree, is translated as Shraddha in Sanskrit. And faith to Sri Aurobindo, as he's made clear in his letters, is a power of the soul which feels and knows that there is truth in a particular insight or direction. It knows it from inside. It resonates inside. It's not an intellectual knowledge. It isn't something that is gained through study. But it feels that this is the decision that I should make. This is the path upon which I should place my feet. This is the action of offering that I must make into that luminous being before me. So, faith is the signature of a resolute will that has a deep, a profound knowledge behind it. It does not give voice to it. It doesn't have to defend it. It isn't structured as a belief. Simply, it is faith, Shraddha. Sincerity, if we were to translate that into Sanskrit, would be satya, truth, just being true. True to the nature of your being, sat. Or you could say satyanishta, which is to be grounded on truth. That you won't stand on anything else, that you will adhere to truth, and truth alone is your guide. So sincerity means being true in nature. Another term would be sarala, which means to go straight, not to be crooked. But it's a movement that is implied. So sincerity is not simply passive, but it would be a movement towards, you see. It would be an active stance, a stance that is dynamic. And surrender, of course, we've talked about already, samarpana, the joyous self-giving of oneself to the divine through whatever article we give. We give ourself. It represents something in and of us, which is why the offering is so profound. Our experience, not simply our wealth, but our insight, which in the Veda would be recognized as kṛta or ghee in modern Sanskrit, clarified butter, that the experience that we have sifted through and arrived at this, and this is what I give to you. Something that has been purified. Let your faith be pure, candid, and perfect. So, he's invoking the power of the soul. Remember, the things written here reflect upon the nature of the psychic being. The psychic character is here, but something which was developed in terms of a practical psychology only after mother's return from Japan, as she grew to assume control of the sadhana and the sadhaks, she placed greater and greater emphasis on bringing forward the psyche from behind as a chief element in the practice of the yoga. When Sri Aurobindo was serializing the various articles in the Arya, there were only a few occasions where he mentioned the psychic being. It began to have prominence only when Mother brought it forward as the key to how we convert ignorance to knowledge in nature. We have to do it in nature, and it's the individual who effectuates that change. And we have to get to the core truth of the individual, to the soul, to achieve that. And so her invocation to the sadhaks is echoed here in this: let your faith be pure, candid, and perfect. This is the kind of alliance that she needs to make this collective yoga fruitful. An egoistic faith is a low and smoke-obscured flame that cannot burn upwards to heaven. The image of the flame, of course, this goes back to Agni, the Vedic god who receives the offering and carries it upward. The Vedic god Agni, who sits on the hearth, but also resides in the lightning illumination of Vidyut, and also is the truth of the solar orb, the sun. The sun represents the supramental, the lightning bolt represents intuition, and Agni in the flame on the hearth represents the psyche, the universal reality, of course, but stationed in each individual too. So Agni, the Devata here, is invoked in Sri Aurobindo's sentence. All of this is redolent with the psychic flavor. Desire nothing. The only our aspiration that we have, if we're in complete accord with Sri Aurobindo and the Mother, is to house in us purity, force, light, wideness, calm, ananda. But look at this. This is a psychic state, but seeking for powers of illumination which are identical with those achieved in Vedantic realization. So in other words, we're going to bring spiritual realizations into the compass of the awakened soul. Remember, Sri Aurobindo writes about the psychic transformation and a spiritual transformation in his letters. Here, this is very condensed, very compact, but you set up in yourself a psychic climate, and then you advance into these wide states of spiritual illumination. And they don't reside in us only psychologically. They don't simply occupy the interior portions of our being, but they must flood mind, life, and body, as he says here. So this is, again, the integral part of his yoga. It must proceed into the body for this to affect the preparation for the supramental manifestation. Ask for nothing but the divine, spiritual, and supramental truth, its realization on earth. Well, this is quite a task. It means essentially practicing the yoga pace by pace with Mother and Sri Aurobindo. But remember, this was 1927, and this was what the group wanted to do. They wanted not simply to be devotees, but to be co-creators of this new integral yoga. Then, sincerity and surrender, genuine, entire, a complete self-offering without demand. Now, clearly they understand, Mother and Sri Aurobindo, that these are progressive states. But again, people want to know what is the standard. What will we do individually and as a group to bring this truth to earth? Show us what the template looks like. So Sri Aurobindo is unveiling it. These are the conditions. And then, of course, those wonderful words of comfort. The more complete your faith, sincerity, and surrender, the more will grace and protection be with you. And when the grace and protection of the Divine Mother are with you, what is there that can touch you, or whom need you fear? A little of it even will carry you through all difficulties, obstacles, and dangers. Surrounded by its full presence, you can go securely on your way because it is hers, careless of all menace, unaffected by any hostility, however powerful, whether from this world or from worlds invisible. Now, if we go back, all that is done in the universe is done by the Divine through His Shakti, veiled by the Yoga Maya. In Yoga, it is the Divine who is the Sadaka and the Sadhana, His Shakti, acting upon the Adhara. So this echoes that as well. Because it is hers. When your way is her way, it is she who is affecting the change in your consciousness. The Divine Shakti has become coincident with your being because you opened. In the practice of yoga, as Sri Aurobindo said in the synthesis, he who chooses the infinite has been chosen by the infinite. Aditi is watching. If you are receptive, if you aspire, she will come. And then the yoga that you practice is her yoga. The steps that you take are her steps. And how can anything intrude itself upon you without your permission? If you're riddled with fear, well, certainly, you may have difficulties because you invite them through allowing the fear to exist in you. But if you're willing to push that out, then even if things attack, if the hostility of the separated powers of the ignorance place themselves in your path, nevertheless, you will surmount them simply because of your adhesion to light, truth, and integrity. They cannot harm you. Nothing in your soul can be touched. At the most, they can have material effect. All your inner being, when given to the Divine Mother, will be protected. Even if there is karmic residue which permits something to occur for you, except in extreme cases, the grace can annihilate even that. Only utkata karma is not cancelable. And fortunately, we don't carry bags of that around with us. He concludes that the grace of the Divine Mother is the sanction of the Supreme. She is not other than, she is the Supreme. Her power flows from authentic, ontic truth, from the single source of all, undivided, radiant, and when she spreads herself forth like a rainbow's manifestation, it is within still her spectrum of manifestation. All varieties and all colors are present in her, but she remains that, unabrogated. So we may come back and revisit some of this in coming weeks. And we may look at some of the background of the Tantra in an upcoming session. We'll choose an auspicious moment. Since we touched upon sincerity tonight in Sri Aurobindo's essay, in his letter, here's something from Book 1 in Savitri, the Book of Beginnings, and Canto 2, The Issue. All in her pointed to a nobler kind. Near to earth's wideness, intimate with heaven, exalted and swift, her young, large-visioned spirit, voyaging through worlds of splendor and of calm, overflew the ways of thought to unborn things. Ardent was her self-poised, unstumbling will, her mind, a sea of white sincerity, passionate in flow, had not one turbid wave. As in a mystic and dynamic dance, a priestess of immaculate ecstasies, inspired and ruled from truth's revealing vault, moves in some prophet cavern of the gods, a heart of silence in the hands of joy, inhabited with rich creative beats, a body like a parable of dawn that seemed a niche for veiled divinity or golden temple door to things beyond. Immortal rhythms swayed in her time-born steps. Her look, her smile awoke celestial sense, even in earth stuff, and their intense delight poured a supernal beauty on men's lives. A wide self-giving was her native act, a magnanimity as of sea or sky enveloped with its greatness all that came and gave a sense as of a greatened world. Her kindly care was a sweet temperate sun, her high passion a blue heaven's equipoise. As might a soul fly like a hunted bird, escaping with tired wings from a world of storms, and a quiet reach like a remembered breast, in a haven of safety and splendid soft repose, one could drink life back in streams of honey fire, recover the lost habit of happiness, feel her bright nature's glorious ambience, and preen joy in her warmth and colors rule. A deep of compassion, a hushed sanctuary, her inward help unbarred a gate in heaven. Love in her was wider than the universe. The whole world could take refuge in her single heart. The great unsatisfied Godhead here could dwell. vacant of the dwarf self's imprisoned air, her mood could harbor his sublimer breath, spiritual, that can make all things divine. For even her gulfs were secrecies of light. At once she was the stillness and the word, a continent of self-diffusing peace, an ocean of untrembling virgin fire. The strength, the silence of the gods were hers. In her he found a vastness like his own. His high, warm, subtle ether he refound and moved in her as in his natural home. In her he met his own eternity. Namaste. Jai Ma.